Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Money Minute with Margarita. We are here today with a very special guest. Every guest is special, but this guest is super special because he is the neighborhood finance guy. None other than Lawrence Delva Gonzalez, the owner of the neighborhood finance guy. So a little bit about him. He will be here sharing tips on budgeting, cash flow, investing, and building wealth. Along with his wife, he proved that it's possible to go from zero assets and over $120,000 in student loan debt to millionaires in less than 10 years. The best part of this is he shares tips along the way. So welcome, Lawrence. We are so glad you are here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I think it's been a great, I guess, year for a lot of people in essence of we're coming out to the end of it. So I'm very excited to close it out. And that's why I love the holiday season, because at least it gives us a good opportunity to just be ease it back and really enjoy ourselves.
Absolutely. So first, I mean, I would be remiss if I did not congratulate you. That is amazing. Not just being millionaires in less than 10 years, but going from zero assets and student loan debt to millionaires. Way to go.
Thank you. Thank you. It's almost fantastical in a way. And it seems very much illogical sometimes when I think about it, because as far as me and my wife came from and the lack of wealth we didn't have and the environment that we lived in was filled with people that never really believed that wealth was even in their lifetime or something that they could even aspire to or understand. And to find that we were at this point, and it was such a short amount of time. When we say 10 years, it feels like it was just yesterday when you start. But in the end of the day, every step actually matters. And you find a lot of resolution in the work that you do, or even just the joy that you have and the gratitude that you have in the process. Because not really the money as much more as the happiness that you gain along the way.
And that's a really great question or a great way to, you know, pivot. How important is, I didn't say was, but how important is mindset on the path to building wealth and creating wealth?
I think mindset is probably the biggest element, especially in communities where people did not have a lot of opportunity or they didn't see a lot of wealth around them. It's easier to get stuck in the mindset in which nothing is going to work out. Nothing actually ever works out for all of us and so on and so forth. I've been surrounded by family members that, you know, were more contented with keeping their head down, their mouth closed, and almost in fear that the moment that they step up, it will actually never work for them. On top of that, maybe because I'm from the Caribbean, so we're very hyper Catholic. And some way the information was warped that wealth itself was evil. And because people internalized it that way in the subconscious, they never actually aspired to be wealthy because they thought of wealthy people the most negative things, like as far as being vile, maybe being selfish or Scrooges or so on and so forth. And the more and more you read and you understand it, you find that a lot of wealthy people generously give back all the time, to the point where you could probably give back even more if you're wealthier than it is that if you're not as wealthy. So there's something there that we do need to analyze and really make peace with as people, as just as American living in America. The idea is that it's very much possible for you to really live a life that is significant and even better, because we're living in a country that's likely 80% better off than a lot of other countries. And it provides a modality that's completely different. I grew up the first 9 years I spent it in Haiti because my mom couldn't take care of me and my sister. She was a single mom back in 82, and she literally sent me at 11 months to live in Haiti. I didn't really know her until maybe 9 years old. And in that process, you kind of just live in this place where there's just not a lot of money flowing around. There's not a lot of opportunity. There's just not even a lot of meat on the table, literal meat, meaning protein. There's just rice and beans that you kind of eat through the day. And sometimes you get some proteins. But for the most part, you find that a lot of people just really stop believing in their own ingenuity, their own sense of self, or even the way that they could process through the world that would be meaningful in the long-term sense. So I don't know exactly where I was going with this, but somewhere along the way in my life, I could tell you for sure your mindset could really trap you into a bubble, into a wall in which you think that nothing is possible, whereas everything is fundamentally possible in America, where you're getting free education, K-12, you have running water and utilities, and you even have paved streets, which a lot of countries don't. So there's a lot of little things we could really maximize to the betterment of ourselves and our communities.
Now, that's so on point in the sense that the number one thing we have to give people is hope, right? Hope, and allow people the opportunity for financial dignity. So a lot of people will say, well, I can't be a millionaire. I don't earn a lot. So how can individuals achieve millionaire status while making less than six figures?
And that's the case for a lot of Americans. The median American income is around like $75,000, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of people are not making over $600,000. And for the most part, you still find that teachers, specifically teachers, being like on average making less than $50,000 a year or even maybe $60,000 a year, end up being one of the core groups that become millionaires in their lifetime. Why? Because wealth itself is a simple equation. It's merely your effort or your contributions times the rate of time, the rate of return times the time that you put in. So all three of these elements end up being very crucial and very important. So even a person that doesn't make a lot and even just invests, let's just say $100 a week or even $400 a month, in over 40 years, they could become millionaires. Because it's not really the amount. Sometimes you don't have the full value of your contributions that you can actually put forth in the front part. You have to allow it to cook, as they say in the South. You got to let it cook like it's gumbo. So the flavors get marinated. And over time, because of compounding interest, you'll be in a position to leverage all your effort, leverage all your labor into a mean of production in which that creates that wealth for you. So even if you're not making a lot of dollars right now, it doesn't mean that you won't be making a lot of dollars later. But ultimately, the idea is not the amount of money that you make, but it's how you use your money that could really change and pivot the trajectory of your life. So there are numbers, there are mathematical things I could toss at you, there's calculation I could show you. But in the end of the day, it really comes down to you taking the effort to say, you know what, I will put down at least 10%. I will put down at least 15% of my income. I'll put down at least 25% of my income. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. But over time, if you're taking these steps, you will get to the end of the road. And that end of the road will open up opportunities for you. And it'll show to other people that you want this. I'm a firm believer of that life itself pivots towards productivity, and it pivots towards people that really want more out of life than just sitting around for it. So if you are in that position making less than $50,000, consider ways you can either decrease your unintentional expenses that you don't really need, that you don't really care for, increase your income in any way, in shape or form, because you could also pick up an extra job, you could decide to do something online, or you can even decide to even pivot from the current position that you are and to find maybe more meaningful employment that pays you a lot better. So that is also possible. And finally, the third part is to invest the difference. And invest the difference doesn't mean just in stocks. It doesn't mean just go buy a home. It could mean a myriad of things. You could invest the difference in your education to increase your income. You could invest the difference in your certifications. That's also can increase your income. You can invest it in real estate, buying a home, sitting in that for a good 20, 40 years. You could also invest into the point where you have a small business, and that small business could start generating more than whatever you're earning right now. So ultimately, these three steps, these three fundamental key pieces of income, expenses, and investing the difference will make you a millionaire in your lifetime.
I love that. Consistency and creativity. And when I look back, you know, when I was a student, I was an exchange student in Tokyo. Tokyo is one of the most expensive cities in the world. I had my full-time job. You know, I had this job when I was in school, but then I was creative. I was like, okay, how can I save money? I got free rent in one of the world's most expensive cities. Now, how did you do that? I used my skills. I got free rent because the landlord asked me to teach her grandson English. So I had to help her grandson with English 6 hours a week. It's a great deal because she was so happy with me. She also gave me dinner. So I feel like I definitely hit the jackpot here.
That's amazing. And it reminds me of something at the beginning, I guess back in 2014 or so, when I ran into one of those stories on CNBC. It's like this guy, you know, it's like he he decided to lower his housing and he is paying as little as $400 a month. Some absurd number, some really out there stuff. And I shared it because I thought it was just a very interesting story. And a lot of people said it was impossible. And I was living in the DMV and I was renting in a 5-bedroom, 2-bath situation because the bathroom was so small, or the units were so small that I can't really quite call it a bathroom. But we were sharing and we were all paying around $1,000. And when I read the article, I said, you know what? I want to change my life. I want to see if there's also other opportunities where I could live. And I ended up finding a space that was renting for in a tutu, a larger space with my own bathroom. And I was renting for $500 a month. And at that time, I also shared the same results to other people, the same people that said it was impossible. I showed it to them. And for some reason, they still believe to the mindset aspect that it's still impossible, where I could show them proof that they could actually move from where they are to come live on this side of town. And but they decided not to. And in the end of the day, I ended up buying a unit here for $132,000. That is actually now worth nearly $300,000 as of in 2016. So it's a 2-bedroom. It's a massive by comparison of DMV standards. It's kind of like New York standards or Tokyo standards. It's basically massive, palatial. And in the end of the day, it all comes down to, you know, making sure that you're utilizing all the resources that's just around you, just asking questions, being inquisitive, and also being of use to other people.
Absolutely. So taxes, how does tax planning help individuals and families become millionaires?
I think that's probably one of the biggest, strongest elements in wealth building that nobody really kind of understands, maybe because of the world of taxation. I actually ended up studying for a master's in accounting, specializing in taxation. So I had a deeper dive in it. I never finished, though. I had like 3 more classes to go, but I kind of burnt myself out. But it's until after I actually left school that a lot of those accounting principles kind of hit me. And a lot of tax information just started making a lot more sense. And when it did, I realized that a lot of the average American is not really utilizing the tax code to their benefit. Majority of it comes down to the way that they invest or not invest. So, for example, if a person is making, let's just say an arbitrary number because it's simple to say, $100,000 is just a simple number. If they maximize their contribution to their 401k in 2023, they'd be able to actually invest $22,500. That's $22,500 that would actually be a reduction to their tax liability. So, in a sense, if you do not actually invest, you actually pay more in taxes. And people don't really get that fundamental idea because they think, for example, like a 401k is not of them. It's not for them. It's not in my bank. It's not money I can actually use. So it's somewhere out of sight, out of mind. But if they could really make peace and understand that it's still an account that belongs to them, they'll start realizing they're by putting money or investing money into themselves, they could lower their tax liability amongst a myriad of other things that the tax code is fundamentally built on. It's built on, one, education. So you find educational benefits in there. You find marriage privileges. So if you do get married, your tax is actually a little bit different or more beneficial versus them being single. If you are a homeowner, there's more beneficial stakes in regards to the credits that you take from the interest of your home. There's also other provisions in there for small business and additional provisions in there for investing. So if you invest and you hold for a very long time, you have more preferential treatment on the dollars that you invested. I don't like to most time go into like the deep dive of all the words to kind of confuse people as much to let them know that Uncle Sam, the government, the IRS is really not against you. They're trying to provide you mechanisms in which you can actually use your money, stash it where you can in order for it to grow and ultimately save you on taxes. Another piece of that is later on, somebody, you know, on social media will say, oh, but you will get taxed later. Yeah, you do get taxed later, but you're not going to get taxed on. Well, let me rephrase that. You will get taxed on your withdrawal, not necessarily a lump sum. So you're not just taking, let's say you invested $400,000 or even $500,000 in a 401k, if you're that lucky to have done so. If you do that, you're not withdrawing all $500,000. You're likely withdrawing maybe $50,000 per year in order to support your retirement nest egg. So at the end of the day, you're not getting taxed as much as you might think you're getting taxed, especially on average, retirees really get taxed less than $5,000 a year. So there's something there. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of misunderstanding. But if you really try to understand this to the core level, investing yourself in something like a 401k, an IRA, or an HSA in combination, in tandem, you'd be investing as high as $30,000 or contributing to yourself as high as $30,000 in a year. And in over anywhere from 15 to 17 years as a single person, at 8% historic rate of return, you'll actually be a millionaire based off your investments on their own. If you are a married couple and you're doubling up on all of these provisions, you're looking closer to like 10 years to get to $1 million, which me and my wife ended up getting to. So it's possible, it's probable, it's just a matter of, do you want to make your money do more for you versus then to be taxed out the wazoo?
No, thank you for that. I think it's so well said that, you know, there are incentives to be able to save. And I think there is a lot of misunderstanding. People don't realize that, yes, you do need to stay at your employer to be vested in matching depending on your vesting schedule, but you're always 100% vested in the money you put into the plan. It's your money. I love what you said about cash flow. So a lot of social media experts say that cash is king. You say cash flow is king. Why is that?
Yeah, there's a difference there, because I think sometimes when you find a financial guru or an influencer that has a lot of followers, or they have a lot of people trying, and they reduce the information down to cash is king, it sounds very catchy. It sounds very easy. It sounds very attainable. Unfortunately, cash itself, if you have it underneath a mattress, is basically being hindered by inflation. So that's mathematically, you're just losing the value of your dollars year over year, the more and more you just stash it at home underneath a mattress or even under a rug somewhere. On top of the liability that if fire happens or something, God forbid, you lose all of it. But ultimately, it's not necessarily the best place to keep it. On top of that, I found in my journey is that the average bank savings account, which used to be a lot higher, but it's now generally hovering about 0.01%. Which is insane, because you're really not getting anything at all. I don't even know the doubling rate for that. I think it's somewhere like 72 or 7,200 years or something that it'll actually double your money. So that every dollar that you have in there won't really do anything for years on end. It's a very strange scenario that we're in. But people were told to put it into savings account because there was a year, years ago in a galaxy far, far away, where interest rates at the local bank was north of 8%. It's a different time. I've never heard of this time, but there was that time. And because people heard of it and they remembered it, they passed it along generation after generation to somebody else. Keep your money at a bank, but keeping your money in cash at a bank at 0.01% is not growing. And it's also losing value at whatever the current inflation is for every given year. So to me, what's very much more important is cash flow. Your cash flow is way more important. That means your cash inflow, how much money you're coming in with, and how much money you're spending. Most people that I run into, friends, family, or even coworkers, when they try to ask me for personal finance and advice, I ask them simple questions. How much do you spend a year? They don't know. Or I'm like, okay, I'll keep it very simple. How much do you make a year? And you would think that people are trying to hide it, but they're not. They actually don't know. Some people are just getting money into the paycheck. It's hitting some different times. And for whatever reason, they're spending it on the next thing. And their cash flow is very, very much upside down. And this is not a judgment call on anyone, as much more something that we can all do to really improve it. Our burn rate as a general American household is around like 78%. Whereas in the 1950s, it was less than, 48% or something like that. It was some insignificant amount. But now our burn rate, the amount of money that we just, burn a living expensive alone, is 78%. So for every dollar you make, 78 cents of that is going to all your expenditures. So generally, not a lot is not left for you to do anything other than just kind of survive until the next paycheck. So what we're finding is that people need a better understanding of their own personal cash flow, money that comes in, and how to utilize it better in order for them to reduce their debts. And on top of that, increase their investments. By reducing their debts, they're going to create even more cash flow for themselves, and which is the fundamental behind like a debt snowball or a debt avalanche. You're creating more money for you that you can use to do something else with. So every time that you have money, letting it sit at home underneath a mattress is not going to do anything. However, if you use the money to pay down debt, it's 100% return on your investment right then and there if you're paying down debt. Or if you're deciding to invest it in the broad market, like an index ETF, that's like 8% historical rate of return, you'll be able to somehow manage to beat inflation just a little bit, but at the same time, grow your money way more than 0.01%. I don't know if that made a lot of sense, but Margarita, it was a lot.
No, it definitely did. So it's important to have cash, but having money sitting in the bank, not earning a lot, being productive is not going to take you to the promised land, is what I'm understanding. It's not going to take you to the promised land. So as we wind down, one last question for you. I believe cash flow management is for everybody, but for people who are retired, what are some ways they can boost their retirement income today?
Wow, what a challenging question. To boost your retirement income today, and I think this is why they have to, you know, reach out to people that are certified financial planners, because they work not just on the mythical let's create money, but also understanding and having an intake process that really talks about where are you at currently in regards to your entire financial portfolio or financial balance sheet. For example, my father-in-law, yes, he's going to retirement in the next, 2 years. However, he doesn't have any savings. He actually admitted it not too long ago at the last Thanksgiving. He has no savings at all. We do have a house that's worth around like $500,000. He does have debt on the house that's worth $100,000. So technically, he has like a loose, understandable, maybe $350,000 worth of equity on there. And if that was the case, let's say if he was a single guy and he wanted to just part ways and increase or boost their retirement income, he could decide at that point to sell and downsize. He could completely downsize into a different type of living arrangement, moving with different people, to also ending up with that over $300,000 that he can use either to do a couple of things. That $300,000 could be used to be invested in, better performing stocks for at his age, mainly being dividend stocks or bonds that kind of retain their value, ultimately structuring in a way that he understands how much money is coming in and making that stretch all the way to the full term of his life. On top of that, there's other ways you could boost retirement income, I believe, in the sense of maybe even making sure that you're looking at the Social Security timeframe that you have. Let's say if my father-in-law was 62, if he didn't have enough money to retire, I'd also recommend that maybe he works until he's maybe 65, 67, because the longer and longer you stay within this range in Social Security, you end up actually getting better payout allotments at different intervals. So by age 70, I think it's max contribution, you'd actually have a lot more, but yet a lot of people wouldn't want to actually just completely work until 70. So that's understandable. So this is why there's multiple ways to skin this cat. And I think in the end, there are ways to take your investments, structure it, put it into dividend paying accounts, and use that on top of your Social Security, on top of even family allotments, or even ways that you could even do side hustles, maybe even consult, maybe do even some tutoring or teaching on the side, because I've seen a lot of people do it in Miami. So there's ways to improve, but you're going to have a strong conversation with a certified financial planner. That'd probably be my best answer for that. You have to talk to a certified financial planner, because they're going to talk to you through all your different myriad of financial liabilities, responsibilities, or even where your retirement income is coming from, and structure it hopefully in a way that could actually yield you a good enough return to really live a respectable life based off the amount of work and amount of labor that you contributed to your community, to your country, and to yourself and to your family.
Well, thank you for that. So, Lawrence Delva Gonzalez, the neighborhood finance guy, how can people get in touch with you or follow your work?
You could Google me. So I'm very proud to say that, which is actually insane. You could definitely Google me if you want to, but you could follow me on the interwebs at theneighborhoodfinanceguy.com. So anywhere that you see the Neighborhood Finance Guy in the whole full word, no shortcutting this one, you could actually find me there. You could also find me on LinkedIn if you want to reach out to me professionally as Lawrence Delva Gonzalez. And you can pretty much find me on Instagram, because I'd like to share as much of these wealth tools, wealth simple, wealth hacks, or even tips that you can really use that's not going to put you in undue harm, but to also maybe even broaden up your horizons or give you different ideas. Because me and my wife, we're going to retire, and we're going to retire to Brazil or likely Portugal, because that's where we're going to get our money's worth within our retirement. So I definitely want to see you guys on the other side of wealth. So definitely connect with me if you want to. And, you know, I would hope not just the connection, but definitely want to see you take action in your life. And that's what I really live for. I want to see more people happy, more people living, and more people really creating a broad range of opportunities for others as well.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on Money Minute with Margarita.